Hi, and welcome to the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, a canine nutritionist with an innate obsession with dogs and the natural ways in which we are driven to live because of them. So, let's get to it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Tonight, I am joined by Rosie from Vermex, and we are discussing how working for Vermex snowballed into changing her way of life. Rosie is mama to Diz and Pep the dogs and Nessie the cat. Welcome, Rosie.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. Are you feeling okay?
Oh, always. Yes. It's Tuesday. So yeah. And that's great. It means it isn't Monday.
So, yeah. That's definitely one way to look at it. Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining me to come and share your story into, you know, how you changed your whole life into living naturally and mainly around your dogs. So first of all, as always, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your pets, and obviously a little bit about the reasons of how you kind of look to more towards natural things.
Okay, so I'm Rosie. I am 34 years old. Yes, that's how old I am. And I live in North Shropshire on like the Shropshire Wales border. It's lovely. We live very rurally. I work from home for Vermex. Vermex are based in Somerset. The dogs are like, obviously, we have a child. The child is a fairly new addition, but the dogs are the original babies of the house. So much so that we can't refer to our actual child as baby because the dog is baby, the oldest dog. So, like, you slick it. So my husband especially, like, he's a bit obsessed with her, and he'll be like, oh, hey baby, how are you doing today, to the dog, and it's like, oh, okay, right. Honestly, she's everything revolves around her a little bit. She's queen of the house. That's Diz is 10 years old this year, and she is a Dalmatian. We got her as a puppy, and she is an absolute superstar. She's a lovely dog, absolutely lovely nature. And I don't know if any of your audience have ever come across us at an event or anything like that. It's usually we'll have her on the stand as well. She's an absolutely super dog, so she's great. And it was interesting with having a Dalmatian because they are one of those breeds that can come with a lot of issues. I think, as with many pedigree breeds, you run the risk of them potentially having been overbred at some point. And the lady that we did a lot of work before getting Diz to understand, okay, where were we getting the dog from, and, you know, the kind of situation that we had. And we really wanted her to have come from a pet home as well, as opposed to a more commercial home. And so we were able to meet her mum, her sister, her grandmother, the breed has still got one of Diz's nieces now. So there's a whole, like, she wasn't too far away, a couple of hours. And obviously they need to be hearing tested. She was also, you know, hip tested, and there was a lot going on. But obviously one of the big things with Dalmatians is bladder crystals and sort of urinary issues and things like that. And that was quite we didn't really sort of know too much about that to start with, but we got told, I think, by a vet when we took her for her puppy jabs that we might want to look at like the Hills kind of UD diet sort of kibble. And I remember thinking at the time, like, that seems a little bit overkill. Like, we've got no idea whether this is going to be an issue for this dog yet or not, but, like, let's just bide our time and kind of see what happens. And I'm really glad we did that, to be honest. And then my other dog, Pep, who is more my dog, because obviously the Dalmatian is pretty much, like, I don't know, her and my husband's relationship's probably a bit weird. They are like the absolute, I'm an acceptable substitute when he's out. And literally as soon as he's back home, she's like plastered to him.
Oh, bless him.
So we have Pep as well. So Pep is a fun story. He is 5 years old now, about. He is a rescue. He's from Spain. We have no idea what he is. He sort of looks a bit like a collie cocker cross. He's sort of black and fluffy and cute. And we had never met him before. He turned up at our house, obviously, in the kind of the rescue brought a lorry over of, you know, different home dogs that were coming to their homes. And he'd been born as a puppy in the rescue. The mum was abandoned, obviously, when she was pregnant in Spain. And so he'd only ever lived kind of a life in a kennel, essentially. And then he got him. And I remember taking him on his first walk. And obviously our horrible Shropshire grass in November, I think it was. And he was like walking, picking his feet up really hard because the grass was wet. And he didn't understand what was going on.
Bless him.
And he's just blossomed into the most hilarious little guy. So he's just really sweet. Like, he's the nicest dog, and I love him very much. Like, he's just so, like, I don't know, because it could have, I mean, you don't know what you're getting. You have no idea. You read a paragraph and you do an interview and they say, okay, we think this is the best dog for you. And you go, okay, then, sure. Like, hopefully you know what you're saying. But he turned up and it was like, he's just, he's lovely. He's amazing. And it really could have been a very different story. So a lot of respect for anyone who's rehomed a dog and that is having to work through big issues, because we've been like severely lucky here and haven't had any problem. I mean, he cocked his legs in the house a bit to start because he'd never lived in a house before. But, you know, he's just an absolute little superstar. So, yeah, he's good.
Oh, bless him. They sound like a set of cuties.
Yeah, they are. They're gorgeous. We're really lucky. So, yeah. It's nice. So I first kind of, so before, I think before all of that, Skinners. It was Skinners. I used to buy Skinners salmon. In my defense, it was the expensive bag, the Field and Trial. So before Vermex, I worked for, in the marketing team for a chain of big agricultural stores called Wednesday. And that was great. And it was brilliant because I had a staff discount. So I had access to all the discounted dog food that I could get. And I just remember sometimes when I'd have to be working on labels and things like that for like the own brand dog food that we made, or well, we didn't make it, someone made it for us and we whacked it in a bag that said, you know, blah, blah, blah on it. And I'd be sort of looking at the ingredients and like one of the main ingredients would be like potash. And I'd be like, oh, that doesn't sound very appetizing.
What? And it said that on the label as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, this stuff was about $7.99 for a 20 kilo bag. So realistically, nothing. And I just remember thinking like, nothing good is going into this, is it? So I was always trying to kind of, I sort of always thought, oh, this isn't maybe that great. And then I took a bit of a break from that job I was working for and another agricultural company. And again, but with cows, love cows. And a big part of that was that we had a whole section of the business called Dairy Chems, which is basically the chemicals that farmers need to either give cows or use on cows on a daily basis to kind of keep things functioning and healthy on a farm. And some of those are really good chemicals, you know, there are things that are really beneficial. But a lot of what I did do was going out, for example, to smaller farms in Ireland and looking at the way that they were working with their cows to get slightly different results than the UK kind of the English more industrial sized situations. And that was really interesting because they had, and certainly the organic farms as well, they just had almost a completely different mindset. And it's really weird, like, to say that you get a vibe from a cow, but like the cows just seemed happier. You'd go into the barn, they were more settled, they were more curious, they'd come over, they'd want to be like looking at what you were doing in there, and they'd be so much more, whereas, you know, in the kind of more pressured units, they would be backing away. They would be a bit wary of what was going on. You kind of just got, so I was there thinking, there is obviously a reason for, you know, the organic stuff having a higher price tag in the supermarket. Like, actually, these animals are happier and therefore the milk was much nicer. So it's a really interesting way of doing things. And while I was working there as well, we had this, we pioneered this bottling unit. And it's, you could test the milk as the cow was being milked and then bottle it individually. And you had cows that were naturally whole milk cows, cows that were naturally semi-skimmed cows and things like that. And then you, and that freaked, like, I just thought that was so interesting. I got really into nutrition for cows. So,
yeah.
and kind of, okay, well, if you do this and if you do this at this time of day and things like that, then, you know, the differences that you get. And then I, you know, as happens in life, they moved where the office was. I really didn't want to commute to Birmingham. Nothing against Birmingham. It's just a really long way from where I live now. So I was looking for another job and I found Vermex and I applied for the job without really knowing what the company was. And which is mad, really, because actually looking back at Wednesday, we sold Vermex at the farm stores. So, you know, I should have been a bit more aware, but I wasn't. And then I clicked on the website to obviously sort of applying. I was like, oh, I'll have a look. And I saw lots of animals and I was like, oh, this is great. There was some lovely branding. I had no idea what the products did at all, like absolutely no idea. And a lot of that, I think, and it's whether that's something you come up against a lot within your conversations with people and stuff. So we at Vermex now, we sort of have to do a lot of work within the confines of the VMD, the Veterinary Medicines Directorate. So they are part of DEFRA, and basically they're the pharmaceutical, they hold the pharmaceutical licenses. So when you bring out a new flea and tick product or a new wormer or something like that, you pay them the license money for the product, and then you get to be able to use the word wormer. I categorically am not allowed in my capacity as an employee of Vermex to say that Vermex is a wormer. So if you look on our website, you don't ever find us saying this is a natural wormer for dogs.
Yeah.
Even though we might be able to prove that that's, well, actually, we can prove that that's what it is. We've, you know, done our product testing. We're not allowed to publish that product testing because we're not eligible for a pharmaceutical license. Yeah. And once I kind of started going down that rabbit hole of like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but like, it became really
yes,
annoying
that
because it's not got a chemical,
a drug,
pharmaceutical in it, we can't say that it does the thing that it does. Like, who decided that, you know, Zoetis owned the word wormer? Who decided that Seresto? You know, and weirdly, we can talk about flea and tick differently to how we're allowed to talk about wormer. We're not allowed to talk about allergy. You know, we do a product called Itchies, which is aimed at, you know, looking at natural, you know, how can you naturally promote your dog's immune system so that it's not feeling as run down by, you know, grass allergies, pollen allergies, anything like that. And, you know, we can't use the word allergy. We can't say, we literally just can't, like, the word allergy. It's mad that you can be restricted from that, even if you can prove the product works. But I've got slightly off track here.
Don't worry, it's fine.
as you know, obviously, you know, Nick Thompson, the gut doctor, the holistic vet yourself. But he has been the consultant vet for Vermex for the best 14 years now. So he's worked on from almost day one on everything, basically, and product, all our product formulations, our product safety, when we're looking at, okay, well, could a dog with this condition take this, and could they take it in combination with this and this, and how, you know, can we tweak the recipes, can we do this and that and the other. He's been involved from the start, and so as part of, I was lucky enough to get the job with Vermex, and when I had my first kind of introductory call with him, the first thing he said was, "And so are you a raw feeder?" And again, like, I had no idea. That was so new to me. I had no idea what he was even on about. Like, I'd seen, you know, a couple of, I've seen freezers in pet stores, and it was always Nature's Menu, and it never looked particularly appetizing. It was a bit pants, really. And then I was like, well, no, I'm not a raw feeder. And he just said, well, you should be. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll look into it, definitely. And it just went mad from there, really. And as soon as we started looking into that as a company, we realized, oh, these are our people. These are the people that are questioning everything and trying to work out how they can do the best possible thing for our dog, for their dogs. And those are the people that our products suit, because we know that they work, and they're brave enough to ask the questions and to look at the alternatives to the situation. And then it just kind of clicked that we would work more with raw feeders. And once you start looking into it, and once I'd done a couple of Facebook lives with Nick, and he was talking about, you know, things like vaccinations and things, and you know, vaccinations are brilliant, but like, I didn't realize that the world's the Small Animal Veterinary Association tell you that you should actually only be vaccinating your dog every 3 years. So yeah. I'm reading guidelines and I'm thinking, well, this is the World Small Animal Veterinary Association. They are a governing body for the industry. So why is my vet telling me something different? And then it kind of linked into, oh, because of the licensing, and because of this, and because of, and you just get it. It's suddenly you realize how connected it all is. And yeah. And then we started, especially when we launched the flea and tick product again with Vermex, which was, it's my favorite product that we do. The messages we started getting from people that were saying, oh, really glad you do this, because actually my dog's had a reaction to Bravecto, or had a reaction to this and that. And there's an amazing Leon Berger that we work with, who had, unfortunately, now has seizures for life because of a reaction he's had to Bravecto. And the issue that you have with that then is, but they can buy a license for that and yeah. promote, and we can't do the same for our natural product that no dog has ever had an adverse reaction to. And it's a really interesting kind of conundrum. But once you start questioning it for your dog, suddenly you start questioning it for everything, I think. Like, that was what happened to me. I don't know if that's a common theme
with your
you start thinking like, oh, okay, so I'm worming my dog every 3 months, whether they've got worms or not. That is basically like waking up in the morning and taking a paracetamol in case you get a headache. Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't do that. Why would I do that? So why am I doing that to my dog? And again, as soon as you start having those conversations with other people, it's like, oh, okay, so yeah, potentially maybe I should be doing that a bit less. And is there other ways that I can do it? And can I be worm counting so that I know that, you know, this isn't going out there? And I was saying to you in our pre-chat as well before, so we had lovely sheep. We haven't got them at the moment because sheep are a financial black hole right now. But we would be worming them in accordance with all the guidelines. And the guidelines say that when one wormer stops working, just change brands and use a different wormer. Or the best approach is to use a combination of wormers. And then, so we'd be worming
them all the time, sheep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a few times. You want to do it just pre-lambing, and then you do it again in the autumn. But then you need to do it ad hoc, as when you notice a sheep that's looking particularly wormy. And then obviously once they start getting worms and they start getting like a pooey bottom, that's when they get, the flies start laying eggs, then they get maggoty. Like, and it's just a whole situation.
Yeah.
Keep a really hard work.
Yeah,
they're lovely, they're absolutely lovely, but the cows are definitely easier. But yeah, it's sheep would be easier, they're smaller. No. So, yeah, you and I'm putting all that into the sheep, which then the sheep pooing that, and then I went, it was again, I can't remember where I was, but I was listening to something and someone was telling me that we're seeing a massive decline in the beetle population of the UK because the dung that they're rolling, the dung beetles especially that they're rolling, is full of chemical wormer.
And wow,
it's killing them. And actually, you take away those beetles from our ecosystem, what happens then? And so you kind of start going down that rabbit hole, and then you spend too much time with raw feeders, and then you start thinking, well, I actually, yeah, this is ridiculous, and you know, I need to try it. So I tried it. I had a consultation with Nick first, because obviously one thing with Dalmatians is you've got to be careful with offal because of the purine situation. So so we were quite careful with that, and Nick was really helpful and sent me through like a really good list of like low purine sort of offal and, you know, different things that you can start including. And that kind of threw me in at the deep end, because immediately I'm having to DIY. Like I can't buy completes, because I've got to be making sure that I've got certain cuts of meat and certain things like that in for days. I mean, Pepe could eat whatever he wants, but you know, if you're doing it for one, you've got to do it for the other. So I started making bowls, and it was the change in the dogs. So she doesn't like our dummy. She's 10 years old this year, and people still think she's a puppy. Like, she looks so well. And she was really greedy before. So we'd always found her weight would fluctuate quite heavily. And on raw, she's just lovely and lean. She doesn't smell. And like, there's been the odd kind of few days where if we've had to resort to kibble because we've run out of raw and the shop doesn't open on Mondays and you need to, you know, so we go to lots of dog events and pet trade events and stuff. So I've always got like samples of food, things like that. So I'm like, okay, do you know what? It's one night, she can have, you know, basically dog McDonald's for the night. One night, but it won't kill her. You're absolutely right. But what it will do is make her absolutely stink.
Like, oh, does it?
Yeah, unbelievable. And it will be within about 2 hours of them having had it, the farts will begin. And it is just absolutely toxic. And then you get them back onto their proper diet again, and they're a dream. Like, poo picking is a delight in the garden, because it's so easy. And it's so small, and there's just not as much of it. And so once it sort of started happening and I saw how well the dogs looked, I was like, well, this is mad. Like, and you know, we've always been quite good here as well. My husband's really into growing food. So we're really lucky because we've got the space to do that. And you know, he seems to have the time and the inclination somehow. I don't know how, I should probably question that. But yeah, so we've always, you know, I try really hard not to buy processed food. I do enjoy cooking. So I like to try and make everything. And again, it was just that sort of, why am I making my food but giving my dog like literally a brown biscuit every night sort of thing? The more I thought about it, the more I realized just how much of a, like, I was annoyed at myself for never having asked the questions sooner and thinking, why have I just followed along and bought this and bought that because I was told, yeah, you know, this is it. You put the kibble in the bowl, you put the bowl on the floor, there you go, sorted. Yes, it's harder to do, not harder. It's more, look, a raw diet is more time consuming for your dog. It is definitely, but it's less time consuming in the fact that you're dealing them. I find I'm dealing with less medical issues. Like, my dogs don't have to go to the vet. They don't, you know, they are well. And I think, is it 70% of vet trips in the UK is because of is stomach complaints?
Yeah.
So if you think, you know, if I've immediately cut down 70% of my vet trips, which I'm delighted about. So I think it's quite an interesting, it just sort of, I'm really grateful that I just, something made me click on that job advert and I I went for it, because I think, I don't know if I'd have maybe gone down this road if I hadn't, but I, like, everyone in the house is happier, everyone's healthier, everyone's, you know, and I have a lot more faith in that if I ever have to use antibiotics or pharmaceuticals or anything like that, that when I need them, they're going to work, as opposed to just using them routinely because I've been told that that's what I should be doing. And I don't want to live like that, really. I want to try, you know, it's really the dung beetles. Like, we need to save the dung beetles, guys.
We do. I know I'm laughing, but it is the truth. And I think sometimes it's easy to kind of get lost in the bigger picture. Oh, sorry, get lost in not thinking about the bigger picture. And I think that's the problem most of the time. We just don't think. It's like the same, like you were just saying, with feeding dogs dog food. It's sort of like we just go into autopilot. And yeah, we might think about which dog food to buy them, but we're not actively thinking about the food and about the effects it has on the dogs and about the treatments. It's like there was a time where dogs didn't used to be so heavily vaccinated. They didn't used to get flea and worm treatments every month or every 3 months, or it was just dogs were just dogs and they ate scraps and they roamed around for a bit and that was that, and everybody was happy. And then all of a sudden in the past 50 years we've started feeding them processed food and doing all these other mad things, and then now the health is declining. But yet people just kind of like accept that, oh well, this is just what we do now, this is how we have a dog. But actually, if you actually actively think about what you're doing, then you do fall down that massive rabbit hole and you just get lost.
You really do. I think it comes as well with, like, actually you're feeding the dog kibble for yourself. You're not doing that for the dog. You're doing that because it's easier and you don't have to think about it. And you're worming the dog because it's easier than doing a worm count. And it's easier than, I mean, I don't think doing a worm count is hard, but like, I can imagine lots of people don't want to be like peeling off bits of dog poo and sending it off in the post sort of thing.
Why not?
I can't imagine. That's a great Friday night for me. I think it's just a really interesting, like, we've got to stop assuming that the easy option is the best option.
It's the best, yeah.
There's just never... there's no way in life that, like, people say that to you all the time, like, oh, you've got to work for it, and, you know, that the easy ways, you know, never is worthwhile and you won't get the rewards. And if we look at that with our dogs, it's exactly the same. I think that's just so important. Like, when you're giving them a wormer, it's because you don't want to have to deal with the fact that they might get worms. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't, if they do, treat it. If they don't, then great, you've A, saved yourself a fortune, and B, you know, it's
baby dog and the immune system.
The environment, the chemicals in a wormer don't have the ability to isolate the good bacteria in the gut from the bad bacteria. They don't have that kind of the intelligence. So they get rid of everything. And that is really like a dog's microbiome. If you weighed all the bacteria inside their gastrointestinal tract, it would weigh more than their brain. Like, it's so important to them, and it's, you know, every
constantly getting wiped out.
Yeah. And then people went, like, someone at a dog show was like, oh, she does always seem a bit quiet the week after her wormer. And I'm like, yeah, she's probably feeling rotten. But, like, you know, you can't judge, because that was me 4 years ago. That was me, you know, worming the dog very happily. Thinking, yeah, okay, great, another thing ticked off the list. Don't have to worry about that now for 3 months.
Same, I was like that, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then suddenly you realise and you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe that I did that. And, like, it's just been a real journey, and it's been really interesting. And the people that we've met along the way, like, we've got a great team at Vermex and stuff, but the ambassadors that we work with, and, like, even meeting you, but the other holistic vets, and other, you know, the ladies that are doing an incredible job running the Raw Feeding Veterinary Society, offering support for vets out there who are raw curious, which I think is just absolutely fantastic that they're putting their time, you know, that's on top of their jobs. You know, you all these, I don't think you'll find, you don't, I mean, other than the kind of big manufacturers, you don't get people sitting around discussing the best way to present kibble, you know, and the different things. Like, I just think it's so amazing to have found a community that just is so caring and so supportive.
And really passionate.
Yeah, definitely. I just think it's unlocked a whole new world of, you know, you don't just change the way you do things. You change your dog's life, you change your life, but also you meet and make like great people, and you've made, like, we've all made really good friends along the way. Like, there is like Esther at Paleo Ridge, who is an absolute superstar. We've got loads of other like small companies that are, you know, sort of doing, and the Niche Raw guys, Ethically Raised, with their treats that they brought out, Dave, like, they're doing an incredible job. And it's just really, it's really lovely meeting these, you know, they tend to be people that also really care about the environment and care about, like, you just, you click with them quicker. Yeah. And it's great. It's really nice. So
yeah, because it's like a sea of people who now have all share the same values, and you kind of just align with each other. And that's why these conversations are so easy and so natural, because everybody's on the same page and looking for the same thing. And it is great, because like we were discussing before, it's slowly and steadily growing now, where people are starting to pay more attention about how they care for their dog, whether it's food, whether it's vaccines, whether it's flea and worm, and they're starting to kind of wake up a little bit, which is great to see. And that's obviously where we come in, to provide the support when they have the questions, because a lot of the time I do get pet parents who really want to switch over to the natural path in terms of flea and tick and vaccinations, but they're just so scared of something happening to their pet that's the reason why they're just so reluctant to do it, because they feel that the chemical treatments are safe, because they think that because their pet has had this flea and tick and this worm treatment or this vaccination, that their dog is now protected from these types of problems.
Which is really interesting, because you've got something like, for example, Frontline, which is, you know, they market themselves as the UK's biggest, or, you know, the UK's most popular flea and tick treatment, and the Frontline spot on. So fipronil, the active ingredient that they use in that now, that is essentially completely, it's useless. So we've made super fleas from using fipronil so much. And University of Sussex, I think it is, University of West Sussex, it might be West Sussex, disclaimer there in case I'm wrong. They have a big study about the decline of insect life in waterways. And they actually found that that's from, you know, dogs in cities going to groomers and then into the water system, and then that's being, you know, dumped in our rivers. But that's a completely different conversation. But they're all being washed off, and they've got, and the fipronil, the imidacloprid, everything from their flea and tick is going into the water, and it's killing then everything in the rivers. And so the impact is more than just, I mean, and no one, I do understand, like, no one wants fleas. My gosh, it's so rubbish to have to deal with fleas in your house. It really is. I'm very lucky, I'm going to touch some wood, that I've never had to deal with.
Same here, touch wood.
Yeah, thankfully. My mum's an interesting case study, because she's very questioning. Both my sister and I obviously feed raw, and we're very passionate about it. Neither of us use the conventional products. We're very careful. We do teeter testing, worm counts, that kind of side of things. We both use Vermix, because we've got easy access for the flea and tick and for the gut health side of things. My mum, we have not been able to sway her, and she sticks to her kibble. She does, you know, the flea treatments every 3 months, all of it. She's just, that's it. That's what she's happy with. And okay, fine. You know, we've tried. Whenever her dogs come on holiday to us, they get like the palatial treatment of having, you know, a bit of raw chopped in, and you know, we'll try it. And they seem so much happier. But anyway, that's she won't listen to us. We're okay. She's scared of podcasts, but it's fine.
I think that there are lots of people still like that, though, aren't there? They do think that we are basically off our trolley. Or, you know, we just, you know, the natural, I think it's one of those things that even when you think about in humans as well, like when humans decide to kind of use herbs and different ways of treating themselves and nutrition and, you know, looking from within rather than just like treating symptoms with drugs, people just automatically assume that because it's not a drug that's been prescribed by a professional, that it's going to be ineffective. And people just have lost faith in the power of nature. And I think that is one of the very real problems, because in our world today, we are so far from that life. Like back in the day, before we had houses, before we had anything, basically any infrastructure, we'd all live in the wild from the land, you know. And that's, you know, all drugs are derived from plants anyway, but people tend to forget that as well. And I think because now we just, society is based around, they want results, they want them yesterday, you know, and everything like that, that they just don't think plants can be effective in treating, or, you know, preventing, or even just building the body strong enough so it can deal with these things itself. And that's kind of where you kind of get the divide. So you get the people who are willing to open their mind and, you know, want to learn about the power of plants and herbs and things like that, and then you get the others who just kind of say
and that's it exactly in a nutshell. And it's like, okay, and I do understand, obviously there's only so much sometimes that you can bring yourself to question. It's a lot at once, I'm sure. But I do think it's really important to, if you've got, you know, the second that something starts sounding wrong to you, or just that gives you pause, like go away and do some more research into it. I mean, even my mum following all of the advice, you know, that she'd been told, was basically, her dogs got fleas. So last year they got fleas, the house, and she treated them, I think, three times with Frontline before she said to me, I can't shift these fleas. I don't know what to do. So I said, well, I can tell you exactly what your problem is there. You haven't, you know, Fipronil is, it doesn't work, unfortunately. I'm really sorry. You need to try something else, or you need to go, you know, there needs to be another option for you. And she did try something else and it worked. But the problem is now, how long until that doesn't work? And then what do you use? You just have to keep going round and round and round in circles. Whereas there's recently been a study, for example, that has highlighted that garlic is more effective as a way. I mean, they've done the study on mice, because they start with mice on many scientific studies, but it was 98% more effective than ivermectin as a wormer. And you think, hang on a second, like garlic, the thing that we can buy for pennies in the supermarket, ivermectin, which is quite a heavily regulated substance, and, you know, obviously if you can't just buy that over the counter, you've got to be given it by an SQP, and it's a whole process, and it's regulated, but yet garlic works better. And that's, you know, that has been categorically, this is, garlic is more effective now. So yeah, okay, well, it's really interesting, and it's just a whole new world then opening up of, okay, well, once you find one and you're like, okay, so garlic's more effective than that, so what could be more effective than this? And then that's when the fun starts, because you get to go down a rabbit hole that working on new products is one of my favorite things to do, to just sit and think, right, okay, how can we make a natural version of You Move? How can we make a natural version of, I don't know, something else that is you know, that they give you at the vets, and you know, how do you make a natural version of Metacam? You know, what because they must exist, the plants must exist, and then you get to, you know, then you get the fun of formulating the mix, and it is so satisfying when you get it right. It is so satisfying.
Because even though herbs as well, like they can, you put these, like obviously with your blends at Firmix, they're in these wonderful blends and they have all these benefits on the body, whether it's, you know, deterring flea and ticks, whether it's preventing worms, whether it's, you know, giving joint support, but they're still so gentle that they have this magnificent impact on the body's ability to be resistant to these kinds of pests, but they still help to keep the body a strong, you know, well, keep it strong and keep it functioning optimally without having to compromise the immune system, without having to, you know, overload the toxins in the system, which then puts stress on the liver and the kidneys. So it's sort of like, it's just a win-win situation all around, but yet people are still kind of reluctant to use it. Doesn't make sense to me.
And you think, like, for a worm or a flea and tick, or for an illness, for a virus, something, to fight a one treatment is so easy for it. So, you know, all that one active ingredient, fipronil, that's the one thing that flea has to work out how to beat. And once it's done that, there you go, it's sorted. Whereas when you look at a natural, like an organic molecule, a plant molecule, you know, they've got something like between 400 and 600 active ingredients versus the one active ingredient. And once you start combining those active ingredients, that's the power of it. And it's amazing even that the same herb, when mixed with different things, will have a different impact as well. You've got the option of using something as, you know, an anti-inflammatory, but it's also, you know, an antioxidant, and it's also this and it's also that, but it just depends on how you mix it with everything else. It's really, really interesting. And you can get a little bit obsessed. And so that's my herb garden now that I did not have 4 years ago is really, and then it's really fun, like watching the cat, especially. She'll go out and like, she'll self-select. There'll be certain things, like she's having a, you know, a wild garlic day, or today she'd like rosemary or something like this. And like, she'll go and hang around, and, you know, she'll go and like calendula especially, like she'll pick things out, and it's really interesting to watch them. Like, see, okay, well, this is what, you know, it's like, well, your dog will eat a certain type of grass on a certain type of day, because I know when I'm having vitamin C deficiency, because I start having like dreams about orange juice. I wake up in the morning and I've had a dream about drinking orange juice, and I'm like, oh,
really? Wow.
It's mad. But like, that's,
it
all links. It's
funny. It is fascinating as well. And I think because your active blends as well, especially, you've put the combination of herbs in, and on the packet it says that it's going to help with this, but it's going to help with so much more as well. But there is just literally too much to list about how beneficial that combination will be, because I mean, that's why when people say to me, you know, what's a good herb for this or what's a good herb for that, I'm like, well, actually, you've got like a list as long as my arm, which you could use for all of the different reasons, because they are so versatile and they all work in synergy with each other, and they all help, you know, support all of the different systems in the body. And it's just so amazing, isn't it? I think working with herbs as well,
it's really interesting. And, you know, once you start doing that, and then you start, you just go, it's like you said, it's just this whole life-changing rabbit hole, because you start thinking, well, this is what I can do for this, and oh, okay, great. And now everybody's like, I'm there busy dosing up everyone that I know with apple cider vinegar and making this, that, and another thing. And you know, I'm like, but like, it's helped my mum's arthritis so much, and I wouldn't have known other than that I was researching it for the dogs. So it's so lovely that there are ways to do these things, so that we know. And like, my advice would always be to someone, if you need to use a pharmaceutical, use the pharmaceutical, use it in confidence it's going to work, because you haven't overused it. That's the key. It's about how we can minimize our impact, and how we can save, make sure that, you know, the things that we need down the line, if we ever need them, are going to work. that's a thing, preserving the integrity of them and benefiting nature as well. So
as well, yeah, because I think this is it as well. People always tend to assume that if you do kind of live a holistic lifestyle, that you are anti-conventional, but that's not the case. It's just that, you know, conventional has a place, and that place is when you really need it. But if there is an alternative way that's going to kind of be in harmony with nature, then why not choose that path? It's going to be gentle on your dog, it's going to be gentle on you and your family, and it's going to be gentle on the environment as well. So, you know, and then, like you say, when you do need the heavy stuff, it's definitely going to be beneficial, rather than, you know, these poor dogs that I see time and time again having to go for another round of antibiotics because the last one didn't work, and they just keep getting prescribed antibiotics time and time again, even though the previous round isn't working. And it's like, well, you know, but you give them some more. It's just, I don't know.
That's it. That's exactly right. That is it. 100%.
Yeah. Really, so from your very colourful journey working with Vermex, what would you say has been the best thing for you?
I think the thing that I value the most is that it's taught me to ask questions of things, or to look at things like turn and learn. So whatever you pick up to buy for your dog, turn it around, read the back, read the ingredients.
I like that. That's a good phrase.
Yeah, definitely. I heard someone use it about skincare, because I think skincare is another thing, like, don't even get me started. Like, we just shove it on, and actually what's in it, that's absorbing. Anyway, yes, so turn and learn. Turn and learn is a big thing, and that's the same with Vermex. Like, we have a company policy where we always basically have transparency. So if something's in our products, we want people to know exactly what that thing is and why it's in there, and that you know, is it, because at some point, yes, we do need to use something as a filler, or we do need to use this, but it's because it binds this together so that then it's in a suitable form. And like, I think that that sort of opportunity to ask questions has been a real game changer, and to look at it and just think, okay, don't just accept that this is why we do this. Look at it and just say, okay, why do I do this? Why do I buy kibble? Why do I do X, Y, and Z? And for me, it's like, I find it now such a reassuring act of love for my dogs to make them this meal that I know is going to be so, that is good for them. It just, honestly, that for me every day is my way of showing them, this is how much I care about you.
Obviously, that is for me too.
And I just think that's, I wouldn't have ever got there without looking at it and thinking, oh, okay. So asking why, basically.
I like that. So on the flip side, what has been the hardest thing?
Freezer space. space and logistics. That's, I think I've always found that as my biggest challenge around the raw feeding. Like, I've always, because I've been so lucky and known that at the drop of a hat I can WhatsApp Nick in the middle of the night and he'll come back to me with a question, you know, with an answer if I'm ever having a wobble about, you know, balancing or anything like that, that I'm quite lucky in that respect. But for me, because we live in the middle of nowhere as well, and you know, the freezer is taken up by an extortionate amount of beef and, you know, all sorts of mad stuff that we have, it's how getting, you know, away from my desk in time to get to the raw food store, because I like to use the shop because I can get lots of different things, and you know, deliveries again are great, but like, I do enjoy actually going and seeing who's doing different things and seeing what's new, and you know, who's doing good packaging here and there and everything. That's just the marketing in me, but I love a good bit of marketing, so. But yeah, the logistics of that, and you know, if we're going camping or something like that, how do we sort of deal with that? How do we know, okay, right, we've got this and this is going to last X amount of time once it's defrosted, and then we need to find somewhere that we can get this and this and this. And yeah, so it's, that's, it's certainly not the easiest thing to do if you're not someone that's gonna be happy to plan. Like, you need to plan. So
yeah,
taking that on is like an extra kind of mental load almost while you're doing everything else, because obviously the kibble was there for the convenience, but you know, you've just got to keep telling yourself that this is, I'm doing this because it is the right thing to do. And yeah.
And to be fair, that's sort of like just taking the rough with the smooth. I think in comparison, that's just little stuff, isn't it?
Really, it really is. Like, it's so it's really not, yeah, it's not a worry.
Really, yeah, is. No, I know. I think I have well, we've just got another freezer because we're a bit, well, I don't know. It's mainly because I'm slightly obsessed with prep at the minute. I do lots of prep because I do it for content for social media as well, but I like to try new things, and if there's something new, I kind of like get excited about getting it and using it, and I'm just a bit strange that way. And especially now I've started doing more prep for our cat as well, because he's a bit of a stubborn monkey, so I've been working on him a bit. Lately. Yeah, he's a bit stubborn. He likes what he likes. He does eat raw food, but he likes what he likes. But he is a farm cat, so he is out basically catching whatever he wants anyway. I can't even remember what I was gonna say then.
Freezers.
So we've just got another freezer, but again, because we've like been living in that on our small holding for just over a year now. We're now branching out into growing our own food and everything like that.
So, oh my gosh, great. We can swap tips.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a complete newbie to that anyway, so let's see.
Welcome to polytunnel life. You'll get a dip before you know.
I know. It's like, it's what we're doing at the minute, but I think you do kind of have loads of mad stuff in your freezer when you live this way, don't you? Because especially if you're harvesting stuff or like trying to, you know, just basically take care of what you've got so that you can use it. Because I remember when we used to live in our hometown, we were so wasteful with food. And like now we've moved here, we barely waste, like we don't waste any kind of, apart from obvious rubbish, but any kind of like kitchen scraps or anything goes straight in the compost. Like, we don't waste anything. And like food, I'm so much better now at making sure that it gets eaten before, you know, like it spoils. Whereas before, we used to like have stuff in the fridge and I'd get to it and it'd like gone off and I'd be like, you know, just chucking money away. Whereas now I find, but I'm so much better now that, but now we live in the middle of nowhere, so we have to kind of.
Yeah, you've got to make do, amend and go for it. I've set myself, because the baby's going to start weaning very soon, really. And my goal is for his first few months to only feed him things that we've grown, so that we know, like, completely the provenance of, like, we know exactly what any, like, obviously no pesticides, anything like that. We know, like, that it's been done really, really well. And I'm just really interested to see if we can do it, because I'm not sure. It's, you know, it depends so much on like what actually grows and what doesn't and all the rest of it and how much we get, but I'm definitely going to try and see how far I get with it. And I'm quite interested to see how that stacks up to maybe other kids and things like that. I mean, it's just going to be really interesting with how that, like, his, I'm hoping it means his microbiome will be on point.
Amazing. Yeah.
Definitely.
You tried anyway. That is exciting. I think that's one of the main reasons I'm so excited for us to start growing our own food is for, obviously, Esme. I mean, last year we did actually have strawberries and raspberries, and she actually went out every morning and harvested them and ate them all, so nobody else got any. But just that whole concept of her being able to go outside and pick her breakfast from the garden is... Yeah. It just means everything to me for the way that I want to live my life. You know what I mean?
Oh, I think you appreciate your food so much more as well when you know how long it's taken to get.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this one strawberry that's the product of the last 4 months.
And you're constantly checking on it, thinking, right, you know, is it going to make it? Is it going to be a good one?
Oh, my gosh. We had a bit of a joke with it. So last year on the Vermex show stand, we had we tried to take pots of herbs and things that are our ingredients so that we can say to, you know, show people and show the dogs and things like that, they can stick their noses in them and see, you know, what they're getting themselves in for. And we try and give people facts about the plants as a way to try and connect them to the actual ingredients rather than potash. We had that, and I had a strawberry plant. And there was some strawberry plant, grew this one strawberry, and I was obsessed with it the entire show season. Like, guys, our last show that we do, at the end of it, we're going to cut the strawberry into three, and we're going to eat this. This is going to be our celebratory strawberry. It's going to be absolutely brilliant. And a dog ate it.
What, when you showed him the plant, he ate the
strawberry? I was okay with it because it was a dog. I'd have been really sad if it had been a human. But
I know. Oh, that's amazing though. What kind of dog was it?
I think it was a cockapoo. Of course.
Well, at least I wanted the fruit though, you know. That's good.
To be fair, my dogs love strawberries, so one
of mine eats fruit, the other one won't, unless it's sort of like blended up with something. But yeah, I've got a fruit dodger.
I've got fruit, cucumber. Oh my gosh, she gets absolutely wild. She'll let herself into the poly and pick tomatoes, things like that. She's absolutely wild with it, and I do have to try and stop her sometimes because I'm like, I would rather know exactly what's going into you. But
but that is amazing though, and it's amazing that they have the opportunity to do that as well.
It's really nice. Like, it's that either they're in there or the chickens are, so yeah. At least do limited damage.
Well, yeah, I suppose so.
A crop.
So, is there anything you would say to other pet parents who may be kind of struggling with the whole concept of natural, or kind of going natural, or taking the first steps?
It would be just to talk to people. I'm aware, I'm constantly thankful how lucky I am that I have access to unbelievable resources of knowledge, and it's amazing. And I know that if I ever got stuck, I could reach out to Nick, I could reach out to you, I could reach out to any other of the, you know, the companies that we work with and that we promote and we know that are doing top class natural products that we've met along the way. But I mean, even the companies you don't expect, we don't sell raw food at Vermex, we don't, but we think it's absolutely cracking. And if all of our staff, our entire team, are raw feeders. And if you were worried about it and you even just wanted to reach out and ask, you know, we'd happily give you the benefit of our collective knowledge. You know, I think everyone in the natural pet world is so excited that you're even thinking about having that. No one's ever going to think that your question is stupid. We're just happy to have you. So don't ever, ever feel nervous or insecure about asking questions. There's no judgment. Everybody wants to support you. So if anyone's worried, honestly, just reach out. We do everything we can to try and help.
Yeah, definitely. That's amazing. And it is, it's really strange how enthusiastic raw feeders are, because I'm the same. I help pet parents with any kind of fresh food. If they want to feed cooked, that's fine with me. If they're not quite ready for raw, or, you know, if their dog can't tolerate it, whatever. But if I do get someone who wants to come and they want to go straight to raw, or they, you know, I'm dealing with a dog that's been uncooked for a little bit, and then, you know, their parent starts kind of dabbling in the idea of raw and they want to kind of maybe try it because they've been learning about it, I get so excited because it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those things. I really do. I sort of genuinely get so excited. I'm like, yes, let's do it. Let's get them on raw.
I think you must, but you know how good it's going to be for that dog, because you've seen it work for, you know, pretty much any dog that converts onto raw. They end up looking better if you do it the right way, and if you, you know, if you've as the the pet parent, like, you know, you've done your research and, you know, you do what you can. And like, I think that once you've seen it, it's so hard to not tell everybody else constantly how good it is. It's, you're basically just become very annoying about it. But do you know what? It's worth it. If you can convert one dog, it's worth it. Be annoying, cat. Be annoying.
Yes, I will. I will. To be fair, I think my Instagram feed is full of raw food. Because I don't really give mine cooked, only if they need it for like some kind of illness or whatever. But I just, that's why it's just full of raw, because I don't actually prep that much cooked food. So if you want to have a look at raw food, just look at my feed.
I will.
And it's not fancy. It's not fancy though. I'm not one of these fancy raw feeders. I am just.
No, it's neither. We leave that to the
posh
Alex's foodies of the world. No, we do utilitarian bowls. I invested in some fancy bowls and that's as good as it gets. There we go. It literally just looks like dog food. But
locked in.
Yeah, definitely.
The dogs don't mind.
No. It's on that bowl. It's in that bowl for literally 3 seconds. So that's it. We're sorted.
Yeah. I think that's the same for most dogs as well, isn't it?
As it should. Yeah.
So then, Rosie, if anybody wants to come along and get some advice, whether it's about Vermex products in particular or general raw feeding, where will they find you?
So we are at Vermex UK on Instagram. We're at Vermex EU if you're in Europe and you'd like to reach out. We can provide support in other languages too. That's exciting. And we are on Facebook as well, with Vermex UK on Facebook, vermex.com. I mean, basically just putting Vermin X into the internet will bring us up somehow. We're in terms of kind of Wormer and Flea and Tick sides, myself and one of my colleagues, we're SQPs, so we're actually legally certified to give advice in that sphere, which we think is really important. We can tell you all the pros and cons without having to, you know, you've got the confidence of knowing we've certified ourselves in that as well with DEFRA. But just in general, I mean, find us at, we're at the Natural Dog Expo in a couple of weeks. We'll be at Edition Dog Live as well in the end of August, which is an amazing event. I cannot talk that up enough. It's so good.
Do you have a stall at the expo?
Yes.
Okay, I'll come and say hi.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think there's a rumor that I think we might have to stand up and say things. So we'll see. Okay, that's next week's problem.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
No, definitely. And anyone going to that as well, we're in the goodie bags. So you can try out Vermex for yourself at home and see what you think. And we're working on some really cool, working on some cool new stuff as well that's coming this year. So
exciting. So we'll keep our eyes peeled for that as well. Yeah, well, I will bob links to the Instagram and to the website and everything in the show notes as well. So if anybody does want to go and, you know, get instant access, just check out the show notes and there you go.
Oh, so, amazing.
Thank you, Rosie, ever so much for joining me to share your story. It's been wonderful getting to know you and a little bit about your time with Vermex and your journey. If you ever want to come back and talk about, I mean, I know we did talk about, we talked about flea and tick quite a lot, didn't we? Anyway, we kind of went off on a about that. But if you ever do want to come back and talk about anything in particular, then I'll always be happy to have you.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see what we release this year, and then maybe if there's a way it can help, we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we'll schedule it in. But in the meantime, we will catch up at the expo.
Yeah, see you then. Thank you so much.
Okay, see you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast.
Don't forget to check out the caption for any links discussed here today. And please, if you enjoyed the show, follow along and listen for free on your favourite podcast app. If you have any questions or would like to share your story, feel free to email me at mydogmademedoitnaturally@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Purpose of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be substituted as advice from a veterinarian or other professional. It does not form a client relationship with me, the host, or any guest speakers, and any information is not intended to and does not diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. And my guests express our own views, thoughts, and opinions as individuals, and the podcast neither endorses or opposes the views, products, or services discussed here. If your pet is ill, always seek advice from your veterinarian. I am not a veterinarian and I do not treat disease or offer medical advice.